But the reason that you are stuck in life is because you cannot bring yourself to be ordinary. Their life is built on this fantasy. They can accomplish amazing things. And if you're a puera eternus, you know this. Why do these people exist? Because we're a society of puera eterni. We're a whole generation of people who are living in our parents' basement. And this is the core of the psychological problem. This is what Jung really discovered, is that they cannot make a commitment, they cannot make a sacrifice, they cannot pay a cost without a guarantee of a gain. And if you cannot do that, you will never move forward in life. Today, we are going to do a lecture on an incredibly fascinating concept called puer eternus. Okay, so this is something that Carl Jung originally developed. And puer means boy, like a male child, or puella. So I know that I looked at the title of the stream today and it was like, why some men never grow up. This actually is a lecture about men and women. But the concept is, it's like colloquially known as puer eternus, but it can be puella eternus too. Puella means girl, like a female child, and eternus means eternal. So over 100 years ago, Carl Jung described this archetype of someone who remains an eternal child. And in my like work as a clinician and psychiatrist, my route to this has been kind of interesting, and I just want to share that with y'all. So I started out in, when I was training in residency. So these are people with a lot of like potential, do pretty well in like middle school, high school. Something happens around the time that they go to university. Maybe they get a job, maybe they don't get a job. And so they sort of have this trajectory in life that just kind of like fails to launch in the way that they should. And then I sort of had this amazing mentor who, you know, one time in supervision was kind of telling me, like, she's the one that shared the statement with me that like gifted kids are special needs kids. And I kind of got interested in that. I was one of these kids that was gifted growing up. And then like, I really struggled a lot in my 20s and then kind of got my shit together in my 30s. So I kind of started working with failure to launch people. Then I sort of got into gifted kids. And then once I started streaming on Twitch, and actually before I started streaming on Twitch, I started working with a lot of gamers, right? So these were people who had a lot of potential, had a lot of IQ, but for some reason they failed to launch, were gifted, whatever. And so even to this day, our most successful upload on our YouTube channel is about how gifted kids are special needs. I've messaged my mentor like 15 times over the last few years and asked her like, hey, do you want credit for this? Because this is like your idea and you taught me this. And she's like, no, you don't have to ever mention my name or anything like that. She's just like, she's happy to, you know, not be credited. And then something interesting happened. I stumbled into Jungian psychology. Jung described this concept of puer eternus, which is the eternal child. And as I read this concept, I realized, holy crap, this is gifted kids. This is like a generation of people who are stuck in gaming and don't live up to their potential. This is failure to launch. So he sort of described this concept. And the reason that I'm talking about it as puer eternus, using Jung's architecture, is because Jung did something that I had never seen anyone do before, which is he got to the root of all of these problems. The fundamental psychological block that prevents certain types of people from becoming what they should be. And so I think Jung was really good at describing this internal like psychological process. And then one of his colleagues, Marie-Louise von Franz, I don't know how to pronounce that, wrote a whole book about it. We're going to be showing y'all passages of the book. And like, it's like eerie. When I was reading her book, it was like eerie. This book was written like, I think over 100 years ago, but how it perfectly describes all of these things. And the other thing that is really fascinating is that this archetype of someone who stays stuck in adolescence, right, never grows up, is made so much worse because their psychological vulnerabilities are being predated. Like technology is like the critical hit for this psychological vulnerability. So I think there's a reason why we're seeing a developmental stunting. And I think Jung is like the best at sort of capturing what's at the essence of that, right? So if we look at why gifted kids are special needs, there's like 1,000 reasons. Failure to launch has 1,000 reasons. We have all these like papers on psychology and neuroscience of this part of your brain, dopamine this, and frontal executive dysfunction that, and all this like shit. Like there's like 1,000,000 reasons, right? But Jung is like, no, this is it. And that's what I want to share with you all today. So the first thing that we're going to do is describe the characteristics of the pueriternus. So the pueriternus is, first of all, charming. Okay. So oftentimes these people are, they're kind of like childlike in a fun sort of way, right? So they're like, they tend to be actually pretty charismatic. I think nowadays we don't really think of it as charisma because we have social anxiety, but I see a lot of these people being like the life of the group that they're in. They tend to be the funny person in class. They tend to be like, you know, really like friendly on Discord. They tend to be like, they play, but they don't necessarily play bards, but like, I imagine they're kind of playing bards at a D&D table. So they're actually like quite charming and charismatic. The other thing is that they're incredibly intelligent, quick-witted, kind of likable, right? So when people meet them for the first time, assuming the social anxiety gets out of the way, oftentimes people are initially impressed by the pueriternus. They're like, wow, like this person's really solid. Like they're really great. And so the other characteristic of a pueriternus, which we've kind of already talked about, is that they have a lot of potential. So when people meet them, they're like, wow, this kid is so smart. This kid is kind of going places. Oftentimes they'll have bursts of creative energy. But then the cycle that they sort of fall into is that even though they're like, they kind of come off as strong, they open, like, you know, as soon as the race starts and they start running, they like do really well. Inevitably, they falter. So like their ability to follow through, their ability to live up to expectations, their ability to deliver on expectations falls absolutely flat. Okay. Hey, y'all, if all this pueriternus stuff is resonating with you, definitely check out our resources page. This is a new thing that we're doing for really important topics. We're trying to build additional resources that are all free, things like additional info, additional videos, kind of like a track of what to do next. So check out the link in the description below. And so this is what the pueriternus is. And I want to share with y'all what this kind of looks like. So they generally do not like sports, which require patience and long training. For the pueriternus, in the negative sense of the word, is usually very impatient by disposition. So that such sports do not appeal to them. Okay, so here's another feature, right? They do not like conventional situations. They ask deep questions and go straight for truth. So on the contrary, he lives in a continual sleepy haze. And that too is a typical adolescent characteristic. The sleepy, undisciplined, long-legged youth who merely hangs around, his mind wandering indiscriminately, so that sometimes one feels inclined to pour a bucket of cold water over his head. The sleepy daze is only an outer aspect. However, if you can penetrate it, you will find a lively fantasy life is being cherished within. So this is what happens when you meet a puer, okay? So they're like, first of all, they hate small talk. They're all about big ideas. They're all about grand things, right? So like, I want to be big. I want to think deep. I want to understand quantum mechanics. Like, I don't want to do this conventional life stuff. They tend to actually come across as brilliant or impressive when you first meet them, but they evoke a reaction in other people and oftentimes in themselves of like wanting to pour a bucket over your head. You get frustrated with them so easily, right? Because they're like, they're big talkers, but they just don't show up in the way that, you know, you actually need to live up to things in life. So how does someone kind of get in this situation? And this is where I want to talk for a second about this cherished fantasy life. So the basic problem with a pueriternus is they have big dreams, right? They have big ideas. They're incredibly intelligent. They've got large goals. But anytime they start to exist in life or try to live life, they are inevitably severely disappointed. So anytime they imagine an experience, like the experience is great, but the reality of the experience is like drab and disappointing in comparison. So they may have ideas to create like a fantasy novel or like, I'm going to write a TV show or I'm going to create a video game. I want to become a programmer. I have this great vision. And the moment that they start to engage in life and actually try to do it, the version that they encounter in real life is like a shadow of it. And so then they sort of like, they have this vision in their head, but the real life just doesn't line up. And Marie-Louise von Franz even talks about this in terms of relationships, okay? So let's take a look at this. There is another typical form of this same disturbance. In this case, the image of the mother, the image of the perfect woman who will give everything to a man and who is without any shortcomings, is sought in every woman. He is looking for a mother goddess, so that each time he is fascinated by a woman, he has later to discover that she is an ordinary human being. Once he has been intimate with her, the whole fascination vanishes, and he turns away disappointed, only to project the image anew onto one woman after another. Okay? So this is another kind of feature of this, I think, not another. This encapsulates like the existence of a pueriternus. They have sort of this idea of like a perfect version of things, right? They don't actually have a whole lot of experience, but they're caught up with like, okay, like this is in my mind, there's like a perfect woman out there for me. And the moment that they start to engage with reality, reality is inevitably disappointing. And so oftentimes what happens is like, and this happens in relationships. I think nowadays we see like other kind of permutations of this. So I think like pornography and incelism is also connected to pueriternus. So if you look at a lot of like incel forums or like red pill forums or things like that, they have this like vision of the perfect woman, someone who's hot, someone who's subservient, someone who's there for me, like not a real human being. They have a fantasy archetype of something. And then as they go looking for that fantasy archetype, they fail to find it over and over and over again. And so here's what the cycle of pueriternus actually looks like. Okay. So this is where like, you know, people are saying they put women on a pedestal. So this is why I kind of bring it up. I actually think that that is not correct. This is exactly what I think is important. So it is not that they put women on a pedestal. They put life on a pedestal. This is not just about women. This is, I think, the mistake. And this is where I think why we sort of fail to fix this problem, because it's about way more than women. They put life on a pedestal. So this is what the cycle kind of looks like, okay? So I'm a person and I have a vision of life. And then what happens is I engage in life. And then inevitably, it's boring, grueling, disappointing, okay? So, and over here, you're filled with excitement, potential. But the reality of it never really like lines up. And then you end up feeling dejected. Loss of motivation. Oftentimes what will happen here is that they will encounter some kind of obstacle. So as you engage with it, there's some sort of obstacle that comes up. And so like you can work really hard, but like then something comes up. If a man pulls out of this youthful neurosis, then it is through work. There are, however, some misunderstandings in this connection. For the pueriternus can work, as can all primitives or people with a weak ego complex, when fascinated or in a state of great enthusiasm. Then he can work 24 hours at a stretch or even longer until he breaks down. But what he cannot do is to work on a dreary, rainy morning when work is boring and one has to kick oneself into it. That is the one thing that pueriternus cannot manage and will use any kind of excuse to avoid. So they're capable of brilliance. They're capable of hard work. They're capable of sweat and toil. But the moment that things become difficult, or, and this is what's really interesting, the moment that things become boring, the moment that things become drab, then they lose their ability to work. And here's the other really wild thing. They can even do incredible things. Okay? They generally do not like sports, which require patience and long training. For the pueriternus, in the negative sense of the word, is usually a very impatient disposition, so that such sports do not appeal to them. I know a young man, a classical example of pueriternus, who did a tremendous amount of mountaineering, but so much hated carrying a rucksack that he preferred to train himself even to sleep in the rain or snow, or wrap himself up in a silk raincoat, and with a kind of yoga breathing was able to sleep out of doors. He also trained himself to go practically without food, simply in order to not have to carry any weight. In a way, he led a very heroic existence just in order to not be bound to go to a hut or carry a rucksack. The one thing he absolutely refuses is responsibility for anything or to carry the weight of a situation. So this is what happens in a puer eternus. They're even capable of heroism, but what they can't do is ordinary. They can be magnificent, and even their ego thrives on the idea of fucking normies. When they go hiking and mountaineering, they have to carry rucksacks, pack their food, pitch a tent. I am not going to be a normie. I'm going to be exceptional. I'm going to train myself through yogic methods. I'm going to do all of this stuff. I'm going to like create this weird artificial hardship. I would rather be a heroic, like, kind of idiot. Like, you can just carry a bag, bro. Like, you don't need to have this intense yogic breathing. But this is what their life is like. Their life is built on this fantasy. And this is what's really confusing about it, is that they can absolutely work incredibly hard. They can accomplish amazing things. And if you're a puer eternus, you know this. Right? That's where everyone sees the potential coming from. You know that you've done things that ordinary human beings cannot do. But the reason that you are stuck in life is because you cannot bring yourself to be ordinary. The only option that you've got is extraordinary. Make sense? What a puer eternus fears more than anything else is the loss of potential. So I kind of think about puer eternus as, so this is kind of, right? So like, there's so much potential, right? Like, you're a gifted kid. You can accomplish anything that you want. You have this weird heroism within you, like where like, if you can find the right circumstances, then you can become this like demigod tier being. You can become something like an Elon Musk, right? Because you're just as smart as them. You can become a billionaire, and in the right circumstances, if you can bring yourself to your heroism, you can accomplish great things. But the problem is that anytime you try to engage in life, you don't engage in this fantasy. It doesn't turn out to be the dream that you had. It's this like drab existence. And what really holds puer eterni back is actually this loss of potential. So I sort of think about puer eterni as a pluripotent stem cell. So this stem cell can be anything. It can be a neuron. It can be a cardiac muscle. It can be an astrocyte. It can be a liver cell. It can be like a beta cell in the pancreas. It can be anything. The problem for puer eternus is once you make a choice to differentiate, you lose the potential of everything else. So the moment that you make a commitment, this is the problem. Making a commitment means sacrificing all of the potential. And this is something they cannot do, right? So like there's all kinds of language that I will hear about this. Like, oh, what should I major in? But if I major in this, if I date this person, if I major in this, then what if it's the wrong choice? What if it doesn't work out? What if I don't like it? And they're so paralyzed by being trapped in the drab existence of reality, right? Like, oh my God, if I have to debase myself to become a pleb and make small talk in a water cooler, in a cubicle, as a sheeple, I cannot tolerate that at all. So they're pathologically unable to make a commitment or make a sacrifice. And so what they end up doing is swimming around in a state of pluripotent stem cell, never making a commitment because they're terrified of closing off the doors of life. They're terrified of losing options and being trapped. That is what they fear more than anything else. And if you are pathologically afraid of being trapped, you can never make a choice. So they sort of end up swimming around in this partial life, which I think... This is a great example of this, okay? So, which H.G. Baines described as the provisional life. That is, the strange attitude and feeling that one is not yet in real life. For the time being, one is doing this or that. But whether it is a woman or a job, it is not yet what is really wanted. And there's always the fantasy that sometime in the future, the real thing will come about. The one thing dreaded throughout by such a type of man is to be bound to anything whatever. There is a terrific fear of being the singular human being that one is. There is always the fear of being caught in a situation from which it is impossible to slip out. Okay? Make sense? So what ends up happening is the puritanus ends up living something called a marginal life. It is not a real life. It is not a full life. It's like in the pre-gate area, I'm not going to board a plane, right? So like imagine you're sitting in an airport. There's 100 gates that planes are sitting there that are going to 100 destinations. But the problem for the puritanus is the moment that I get on one plane, I'm flying to another destination, and that means that the other 99 possibilities are taken away from me. So they end up swimming around in the boarding area and never really committing to anything, never really accomplishing anything. And so they stay in this like transitional zone for a long time. What this practically looks like is they will have these bursts of interest and activity. Remember, they can work for 24 hours at a stretch. I'm going to become an entrepreneur. I'm going to make a video game. I'm going to write a TV show. I'm going to make a book. I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to learn the piano. And so they sort of have all of this like vim and vigor for a thing. But then inevitably what happens is they have some kind of obstacle. Something gets in the way. And then they tend to give up. They leave it alone. They go back to their fantasy world, which include things like video games, social media, pornography, whatever. And then their desire to do something great happens again. And then they pick up their next project. So what they end up living is like, you know, 10 steps down a 100-step road, like in 15 different directions. So they have all of these like half finished projects, things like that, and they can never like come to fruition on any given thing. And this is what a marginal life is. They end up sort of existing and continuing to exist with a lot of potential without ever actually sort of creating any kind of actualization. And I love this phrase. So, sometimes the way that psychoanalysts will describe this is something called a failure to constellate. So what does that mean? So a constellation is a collection of stars that forms a picture, right? So you've got like this star, and then we tie things together, and then we end up with something that is greater than the individual stars. But with a puritanus, they never form a picture of their life. They never actually like create a synthesized life that carries value. It's just one random star over here, one random star over here, one random star over here, and it never like turns into a real, full, lived life. It becomes a marginal life, or it stays a marginal life, okay? Now, there are a couple of other things that we need to talk about. So what do puritani really, really, really hate? So here's what the cycle of a puritanus looks like, okay? So first thing is they have a fantasy life. They have a failure to commit. And the reason they have a failure to commit is because this cuts off possibilities, right? The problem with making a decision in life is that you lose the opportunity to make other decisions. And so then what happens is they're kind of in this like perpetual loading zone, but life is moving along. And so since they can't commit to anything, this is what's really scary. This is what's really unfortunate in life. Even if you don't make commitments, life will show up at your doorstep and force you to choose. So then they are forced into a choice. So they get some job, right? Like you got to pay your bills somehow. So they kind of get like reluctantly thrust through a particular door. But that's not a career, right? They're not making a choice that I'm going to be this, do this for the rest of my life. In fact, they hate their job. Their job is beneath them, but they're forced into a choice. Then what they do is they half-ass it. Right? Because it's not this fantasy that like they're like, I'm meant for more than like stacking boxes. This does not take advantage of my brilliance. So they end up kind of half-assing it. So as they half-ass it, the next thing that happens is it is clearly less than their fantasy, right? It's like, this is like not the greatness that I lived for. And since it's less than their fantasy, they start to long for their fantasy, right? So I end up being what I hate more than anything else, which is an ordinary human being. But in my mind, I have great, great, great dreams. So the more ordinary my life is, the more that I hate it. I'm certainly not going to commit to an ordinary life. That's a terrible idea. I'm going to long for a fantasy. And so since there, I'm longing for fantasy, but I don't know, I can't like pick one, right? I can't go all in for something. There's no actual like initiation of activity, right? And this sort of creates something like procrastination. They're not going to quit their job and actually move to Hollywood. And then what happens is they're in the perpetual loading zone. So they get stuck in this cycle where they're like, since I can't commit to anything because I'm terrified of the loss of possibilities, right? Because what if I commit to the wrong thing? And then the other problem is when I do try to make a commitment, why don't I commit? I can start things, but when I start things, it's not what I thought, right? The actual like process of building a video game is fucking boring. Like making cool spells is really neat. Like coding things and fixing bugs and debugging is not neat. So there's this fundamental discrepancy that prevents them from like, anytime they try to move forward in life, they're disappointed and they're terrified if they move forward. Well, like, what if I end up in a life that's disappointing? I don't want that. I don't want to be trapped. They need escape more than anything else. They need freedom to have their fantasies become realities. And that's what they're terrified of. So now what we're going to do is go over a couple of like psychological steps that a puer-eternus tends to take. Okay, so we already talked about how nothing is ever good enough, right? They have difficulty with commitments. They have difficulty saying goodbye to possibilities. There are a couple of other psychological things that they do. The first is they have this belief that in the perfect circumstances, my perfection will come out. Right? That the road to living my dreams is not hard, drab work for 10 or 15 years with a possibility that it never will happen. The right way to have my fantasy become a reality is to find the perfect circumstances. So if I can find the right job, if I can find the right friends, if I can find the right, if I can just find something that brings this 24 hours of manic hard work out, like I know I can do it. In the right circumstances. So what they go doing is hunting for circumstances over and over and over again that will bring out their perfection. The second thing that they tend to do is blame their circumstances, right? So if bringing my brilliance out requires circumstances, the perfect set of circumstances, because I did it for a day and all the stars aligned and I was able to do it for a day. What they end up doing is blaming other people because, oh, like, the game was working great, but then like this person showed up and then I had to do all this extra work and like something else happened. There's a lot of blaming of circumstances. And here's the really crazy, the craziest thing that they blame as a circumstance is themselves. They blame prior you. So this is what's really important. We may think that this is taking responsibility. It's not taking responsibility. Because if you took responsibility for your past mistakes, you would change now. You would actually correct them. But they don't correct their mistakes. What they do is blame prior them as a circumstance. Oh, if I had made the right choice back then, I wouldn't be in this situation. But that doesn't mean they make the right choice today, right? So this is what's really interesting is like there's this weird self-blame without responsibility. So they blame prior them for creating the shitty life that I have today. Or they'll do things like, I don't know if this kind of makes sense, but like, you know, they'll say like, oh, I never learned how my parents didn't teach me this. I missed the boat on that, right? So because, so now if you think about it, oh, like I never had a girlfriend in high school, never kissed a girl in college, never had sex. Now I'm 25. Now I can't do any of that. Like I've missed the boat. So if you really think about it, they're not taking responsibility for their situation. They're blaming their circumstances for their inability to bring their fantasies to life. It's too late for them, which is the absolute absolution, the absolute absolution of responsibility. Right? Because now it's too late. So like, I certainly don't need, like normally when you're behind in life, the way to catch up is through an excessive amount of drab, dreary ass work. Boring shit after boring shit after boring shit, day after day, year after year. That's actually how you put together your life. But the thought of that is so terrifying. I would rather wear the safety blanket of it's impossible for me to fix my life. Classic puer eternus, okay? So the next thing is that they tend to be fragile. They have an image of themselves that is fragile. The reason that they fail to succeed, and this is what's really scary as a psychiatrist, so I see this a lot, is they will point to some physical health or mental health thing that is the reason why they can't do something. So, oh yeah, like my depression is so bad, I've been traumatized, I have an addiction, therefore I cannot. My stomach hurts, I have IBS, I've got this weird autoimmune disease, I've got chronic Lyme. And this is what's so hard about this. As a psychiatrist, I will be the first to say that any of those conditions can be debilitating. But they will use the condition, which may be genuinely debilitating, as an excuse, right? So when I work with people in my office, like one of the first things that I have to solve for them is, just because you have a disadvantage, there is a lot of drab, dreary work, right? Like going to fucking Alcoholics Anonymous meetings 3 times a week, coming to therapy, changing your social situation, deleting contacts from your phone, grinding, going to places that make you feel uncomfortable, but they don't want to do all of those little steps. They would rather just go to some psychedelic retreat and be cured, or just suffer and say it's unsolvable. The one thing they will never do is the hard work. So there's a certain fragility to them that they actually hold on to. They prioritize, okay? Next thing that happens is that they have a defensive arrogance. In addition, there is an arrogant attitude toward other people due to both an inferiority complex and false feelings of superiority. Such people also usually have great difficulty in finding the right kind of job, for whatever they find is never quite right or quite what they wanted. There is always a hair in the soup. The woman is also never quite the right woman. She is a nice girlfriend, but there is always a but which prevents marriage or any kind of definite commitment. And this is not just true of like romantic relationships, it's true of even a career. A hair in the soup is, I think, the perfect example of their experience in life. There's a whole bowl of soup that can actually be delicious, but there's a hair in it. I can't just take the hair out and keep eating. I can't be grateful that at least I'm getting soup that's pretty tasty. The moment that I find the hair, it's gone. So they have this weird, like, defensive ego, right? Where they need to be greater than other people. And this is where the rucksack story comes back, right? So this idea that, like, rather than be a pleb and just carry around a bag and have to like shop and pack and roll up the tent every day and unroll the tent every day, rather than doing the dreary labor, I have this like idea of I'm going to learn a deep yogic breathing technique that allows me to transcend the bounds of ordinary humanity. I will be great or I will be nothing at all. And the really scary thing is that since they long for this like exceptionalism, the world that we live in today gives us many, many opportunities for it that like didn't exist before. So now what we're seeing is puer eterni get addicted to video games, because I may be a noob and have some dead end job, but I'm still terrified to go to college because what if I major in the wrong thing? Then 4 years from now, I've done all of this work. This is what they're also terrified of. Doing a lot of work that doesn't pay off. The idea of wasting time is so terrifying to them that they never end up making a commitment, and they end up wasting time again and again and again and again, right? So they end up creating the life, which is exactly what they're terrified of. So they can't make commitments. And now what's happened is we have things like video games. You know, if we have an inferiority complex and a paradoxical feeling of superiority, what am I going to do? I'm going to smurf in video games. I'm not going to actually do the grinding to get better. I'm going to stomp on noobs. Or they will do the grinding to get better, right? I'll play this game over and over and over again and feel myself be exceptional, but I'm not going to fucking write a paper about theology in the 15th century. That is beneath me. It is for the plebs. So video games are a great escape. I think we're seeing this with pornography too, where there's this idealization, right? Like, so like in pornography, we see all the pieces. We see fantasy. We see a life of fantasy. Like the biggest problem with incels is not that they're alone. It's that they want to date someone who's a 10 out of a 10. They're not willing to date a 1 out of 10. Right? There are lots of people out there. There are lots of women out there who are lonely, but incels feel superior to them, even though they're alone. So there's this weird, like, paradoxical kind of thing where, like, I feel superior to people even though I'm below them. And that's what we know, is that narcissism is rooted in insecurity. So we're seeing that, like, technology is really activating and allowing the pueritarnus complex to really propagate. And we have a whole generation of pueritarni. So now the question becomes, okay, if you're trapped in this cycle, how do you fix it? So let's talk about this. Jung spoke of one cure, work. And having said that, he has hesitated for just a minute and thought, is it really as simple as that? Is that just the one cure? Can I put it that way? But work is the one disagreeable word which no pueritarnus likes to hear. So how do you fix this problem? There's one central thing that prevents a pueritarnus from actually paradoxically living up to their potential. And that is that they are unable to make sacrifices. They are unable to make commitments, right? So the whole problem of being a pluripotent stem cell is the moment that I choose to major in something, something may not work out. And so if you want to get out of this complex, you will notice that in your mind, if you're someone who's trapped in this complex, what you will notice is that you're always looking at the upside, always looking at the upside, always looking at the upside, never wanting to pay the downside, never wanting to pay the cost. And the one thing that you can never do is pay the cost without the gain. So pueritarni want to see a guarantee of the value of their efforts before they ever begin. But the world doesn't work that way, which is why they struggle so much, right? So like I've worked with pueritarni who are like, I'm happy to get a job at a company, but I don't want an entry-level position. I want a strategic position where my ideas will be respected. They want to start at they won't work at a job, but they will absolutely start a company, right? Because the other thing about starting a company and then even if the company requires them to make commitments, then the company will fall apart. But as long as they can do it as a side hustle, as long as it doesn't restrict their potential, they can do anything. And this is the problem with life. Building a life means giving up your potential. Generally speaking, that's what we do. This is why things like commitment are so hard for them, even relationship commitment. They will absolutely exist in these like loading zone relationships that are filled of complacency. Like, I happen to date this person. They're kind of like good enough for now. They're not really the love of my life. They don't actually propose. They don't want to have kids. They need some time to think about it. They're not sure they're ready yet. They're considering opening the relationship. They're not willing to commit to a person because it closes off all of these other possibilities. But they can absolutely be in relationships. They can work 7 years at a job and get mildly promoted over that time, but they'll be damned if they make it their career. And if you look at your mind, you will see this thought process. You will see that with every decision that you are considering making, you are terrified of the cost of the decision, of the closing off of possibilities. But the life that they crave is achieved precisely through that. The fantasy that they have of being an entrepreneur means giving up college, right? You want to be a college dropout. But when it comes time to drop out of college, you're unable to do it. Having a meaningful, healthy, and fulfilling relationship means settling. This word, I have to settle. And that's the one thing that they cannot do. So what we want to do is focus on the loss and be able to really think about, look at your psychology and look at this cycle of paralysis, of lack of commitment, followed by swimming around in the loading zone. And then the really terrifying thing is that like the doors start to close, right? And then once the doors start to close, you go to this aspect of blaming, and the favorite person to blame is former you. And now it's not possible anymore. But if you kind of look at it, now that it's not possible, this excuses you from making a commitment. This excuses you from the drab, dreary work that you need to do to make up for the lost time. Because when you've fallen behind in life, you don't make up for it by discovering something magnificent, by winning the lottery. You really make up for it by like grinding extra hard. But their fantasy tells them, there's some way. If I find the perfect circumstance, if I find the right business partners, if I find this, like I can be a 32-year-old, I can be broke at 32 and be a billionaire at 35 if I find the right thing. And so they, since they're unwilling to commit, since they're unwilling to do drab work, then suddenly they're 35 and they're exactly where they started. They haven't moved at all. And now the problem becomes worse. So now you need a more fantastical thing to save you. And this is the core of the psychological problem. This is what Jung really discovered, is that they cannot make a commitment. They cannot make a sacrifice. They cannot pay a cost without a guarantee of a gain. And if you cannot do that, you will never move forward in life. So the most important thing to do if you're stuck in this cycle is focus on the cost, not the gain. Anytime they look at something, literally, like I've worked with these people, we used to be one of these people. What they sort of look at is they look at the upside, what it could be. Their focus, their eyes are on the fantasy, not the reality, because the reality is drab. And when you get attracted by the fantasy and you encounter the reality, hold on, this is where I wanted to go, but this is what it is. Then you go back to square one. And at least you feel safe because you didn't invest too much. So what you've got to do is really look at the cost. Literally, what I would tell you to do is think about the loss of potential and try to get rid of as much potential as you can, because the potential is what is paralyzing you. It's what allows, it's what traps you or makes it incapable for you to actually take a step forward. Because the moment that you walk through one door, other doors close. And that's exactly what you need to do. Start sacrificing your potential in chunks. The second thing that's really important for Puera Terni is to recognize that the real work is internal, that the struggles that you need to fight are internal, right? So growth is not about like getting promoted. It is about being able to grind. And this is where, once again, that hero complex, this is why I mentioned the hero complex, because the hero complex can come in and hijack this. So you'll be attracted to some heroic versions of growth. We see this with like the biohacking community, where it's like, I don't want to just like eat generally healthy and exercise. I need to optimize. I need to biohack. I need to get more with less, right? I don't want to do what normal people do. I want to figure out a really, really specific protocol that uses the latest in modern science to create a very special kind of health. But just eating oatmeal, beans, brown rice, veggies, lean protein, like you can just eat fucking drab food that is healthy and exercise a moderate amount and do some yoga, and that will get you 95% of the way to maximal health. There's like pretty overwhelming scientific evidence of that. If you need a supplement for fish oil or vitamin D, because we spend the whole time indoors, like sure, some of that stuff is good. But we have these gigantic meta-analyses that basically say healthy diet, moderate exercise, healthy socialization, fish oil, vitamin D, and you're basically golden. That gets you 95% of the way there. Like, we know this. It's been figured out. And everyone is enamored that there is something great, something magnificent, something fantastical. That if I cook things in the right way, if I arrange things in the right way, I will be able to be superhuman. Because I just don't want to be a pleb. The other thing that Puera Terni are really focused on, so on the one hand, they're concerned about the loss of potential. And on the other hand, they are very, very, very stingy with paying costs, right? So like they can't afford to spend their time, their energy, their money. They're some of the most frugal people on the planet, right? And so you need to, first of all, think about closing off potential, because that's what life is. Your potential doors are closing. You have to make a choice, or you don't have to make a choice. You can continue swimming around in the loading zone. And when you make that choice, you are right. You will be trapped. You will be trapped by that choice. It'll absolutely trap you. It will be drab. It will be dreary. It will be you will be trapped. You will pay a high price and you won't have anything to show for it. That's how you break out. That's the core of the complex. If you can shift this one thing, you will break free of it. And the big irony is that once you break free of it, then you open the door to constellating your life. You open your door to no longer living a marginal existence. You open the door to actually building something that you can be proud of, instead of having a heroic fantasy that is like still bypassing all of the drab, normal, plebby kind of stuff. Okay? Oftentimes they struggle with small things too. So I'd say on a last practical note is focus on small things. And this is why I think that, like, you know, Jordan Peterson, I think, really likes Carl Jung, and he talks about cleaning your room. And I think that's a really good thing. So oftentimes your life is built not out of like fantastical 24-hour spurts of movement, but in like really practical small things that are done day in and day out, which feel drab. So you should try to make your life as drab, dreary, and trapped as possible with lopping off sections of potential. And if you do this, you will no longer be a puer eternus. You will literally grow the fuck up. And what does it mean to be an adult? An adult means fucking doing the laundry, doing the dishes, emptying the dishwasher, doing the dishes again. That's what my life is. Like, literally, right? So people can look at someone like Dr. K and they can think, oh my God, like his life is great. And my life is great. Don't get me wrong. But the way that it got here, even I was doing dishes from 10 to 10:45 yesterday because my kids are at home and they like make a mess. And then they live fucking parenting. It's like not exciting. It's not fun. But that's what life is. So let's open it up to questions. Jesus, dude, you are not making a sale right now. Exactly. So I don't know exactly what that person meant, right? But this person's like, you're not selling it to me. You're damn right. That is the problem. Because it has to be so, it has to fit into this idea of fantasy. What do you want me to tell you? Do you want me to tell you? Oh my God, there's a secret technique. There's this one enzyme that you can buy right now for $69.95 that'll alter your dopaminergic circuitry in a novel way. It's this new science kind of thing. And if you understand the science, and if you do this, instead of being a degenerate fucking loser, you can be a billionaire entrepreneur. And it's this new secret thing that will allow you to, without any of the drab, dreary work, will allow you to accomplish all of your dreams. That's what we see on the internet. Why do we have all of these fucking fake fitness, wellness, optimization, podcast, entrepreneur bros? Why do these people exist? Because we're a fucking society of puer eterni. We're a whole generation of people who are living in our parents' basement. Like literally 50% of people under the age of 30 are still living at home for the first time in humanity. Well, not first time in humanity. Used to be normal for a long time. We're playing video games. We have poor mental health. We're addicted to pornography. And we have all of these people selling us, literally. If you look at like these alpha male people, they literally are selling you. It's just a picture of a dude surrounded by a lot of women in bikinis. And he sells you some course for you to enter the upper echelons of society. You can be everything that you claim to be in your head. All of your fantasies can come true. And what do they do? How do they sell this shit? They sell this shit by shitting on normal people. They're like, fuck that. I ain't ever gonna work in a UPS. That is beneath me. I ain't ever gonna date a girl who's less than a 9. I ain't ever, that's all beta shit. They're playing perfectly into this complex of fragile ego, inferiority, and superiority complex. They're playing y'all like fiddles, which is why they are huge. Which is why video games are huge. Puer eterni used to be a fraction of the population. It is quickly becoming a majority. And the really hilarious thing here is that they've even grappled onto red pill versus blue pill. But they kind of flipped it around. I don't know if this makes sense. Taking the red pill is making the hard choice, right? It's like you can live in your life of comfort. You can stay in this world and be a bot in a simulation and not know the truth of things. But if you take the red pill, then you will feel the harshness of reality. I don't know if this makes sense, though. When they idealize that, that is actually the blue pill. It is the fantasy of being a hero instead of the reality of being a pleb. Making the hard choice is actually taking the blue pill and grinding away like all the normies in the simulation with the possibility of not achieving anything. But we have this hero complex where I'm going to take the red pill and I'm going to make the hard choices. You're not making the hard choices. You're avoiding the hard choices and you're magnifying it with some hero complex in your head. Does that make sense? It's like so weird how the people who talk about the red pill are actually the most blue-pilled. They're living in a world of fantasy. And like, do you guys think it's like this is wild? I want y'all to think about this, okay? Mary Louise von Franz wrote this book. She was alive from 1915 to 1998. This is the third edition, was published in 2000. I don't know when she wrote the original book, okay? But this is like, this is a concept from like the 1950s. And like when we look at things like red pill psychology, she's talking about this. Like there's a typical form of the same disturbance. In this case, the image of a mother, the image of the perfect woman who will give everything to a man, who is without any shortcomings, is sought in every woman. So that each time he is fascinated by a woman, he is later has to later discover that she's an ordinary human being, right? And people say like, oh, they don't treat women as humans, whatever. Sure. But it goes deeper than that. This is the fantasy. They're living the whole red pill ideology is an ideology of fantasy. And I'm not trying to like shit on these people. I'm just saying like think about this, y'all. This book was like this concept was conceived 70 years ago. And it so perfectly fits what is going on in the minds of some of these men today. Because heaven forbid I lock myself in to dating a woman who will have the horrible crime, who will commit the horrible crime of getting older. And if she has kids, oh my God, there's going to be bodily changes. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to spin plates. I'm going to pass on my gene pool. And we're talking about dudes, but Puella Eterni are just as bad. The most psychologically fucked up patients I've had in my office are not Puella Eterni. They are the children of Puella Eterni. A Puella Eternus is a female Puer Eternus, right? So remains a child. So these are people who have fantasies of motherhood, but bail. They're people who get pregnant, and then after they have kids, they don't want to change diapers. They're out partying. They don't want to wipe up vomit. They're fucking absent mothers. They want to reclaim their youth. They're getting plastic surgery and become influencer moms and use their children. They don't want to do the work of motherhood, but they will absolutely live the fantasy of motherhood. And I'm going to show it to the whole world, and the world will love me for it. I will be this heroine complex. Look at me. I'm a woman who's just trying so hard in the world, and the world is against me, and it's never my fault. And oh my God, like, I just can't wipe up shit. But instead, what I'm going to do is coach my three-year-old for 4 hours to say something really profound. I'll record them, and then I will upload it to the internet. And then everyone will see how much of an awesome mother I am. Moms who didn't do the dishes, didn't cook for their kids, were terrified of the changes, the natural physiological changes that happen in their body once they have kids. And to try to counter those changes, will seek validation from other sources outside of the home and fucking abandon their kids. Puella Eterni are just as bad. But what I like about this concept of Puer Eternus and Puella Eternus is it gives us a specific insight into a specific thing that needs to change. Be willing to be trapped. Be willing to be drab. Be willing to be ordinary. To radically accept the dreariness of your life. And that is the requirement of escape. But you all need to be careful, because if you're not careful, you will heroize that. And if you heroize it, if you say like, oh, I'm going to be great by accepting the dreariness of my life, that's the Puer Eternus complex hijacking it, and you'll do it for a week. Then you'll realize, oh, the heroic journey of the drab is really fucking boring. And then you'll just start playing video games and jerking off. Hey, y'all. Hope you enjoyed today's video. We talk about a bunch of topics like this on the channel, so be sure to subscribe for more. If you're already subscribed, GG, and we'll see you in chat.